Welcome to Second in Command, brought to you by COO Alliance, where top-level COOs share their insights, tactics, and strategies that made them the chief behind the chief. And now, here's your host, Cameron Harold.
Matt Wohl is a veteran manager with experience in both client-facing and operational roles for technology-oriented consulting firms. As president of Acceleration Partners, Matt's responsibilities include oversight of project delivery and maintenance of client satisfaction. He's helped drive the company from 5 employees when he joined in 2012 to over 130 employees today on 4 continents. Acceleration Partners is a performance marketing firm focused on driving growth for the world's leading brands via affiliate and other partnership-based programs. They have a client roster that includes Target, Adidas, Reebok, Warby Parker, and many others. Prior to Acceleration Partners, Matt managed the rollout of an innovation software for a leading technology transfer consultancy. He was also the key account manager for healthcare technology services firm, handling large hospitals and insurers. And Matt started his career in the film industry with production and creative roles at Fox Searchlight, DreamWorks Animation, and Disney. Matt is also one of the founding members of the COO Alliance. So Matt, welcome to the Second in Command podcast.
Thank you, Cameron.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to talking to you. I mean, obviously, we've spent a lot of time over the years talking and getting to know each other. Love to find out, just I guess from you, maybe tell us really briefly what Acceleration Partners does so people understand what that is, because I kind of breezed over it quickly. And then walk us through what your role is overall today.
Great. So Acceleration Partners is at its core what's called an affiliate marketing firm. So what we do is manage programs for typically larger brands where third-party publishers are able to drive customers, revenue, all kinds of different metrics for the client, and the client pays them on a performance basis. So, for example, if you want to buy a pair of shoes and you are on a blog that is talking about shoes, look at one, looks interesting, buy it from Adidas. Adidas may then pay that blogger a commission, and that's what's happening. So we run programs like that for a lot of different companies, and they're kind of all different.
Nice. And what part of the company do you run today, or what I guess reports to Bob Glazer, who's CEO, and what parts of the company report to you?
Yeah, so I have all of the day-to-day business operations except for Mark. So as you mentioned, Bob Glazer is our founder and CEO. He's the visionary behind the company. He's really a marketer at heart. So he maintains oversight of marketing, but client services, sales, human resources, talent, finance, everything else, business reports.
And has your role changed over the years? Have you always had this kind of a setup?
It's changed. It's changed. You know, back in 2015, I became general manager of the company, and I had oversight over pieces of the business where Bob was still more of the day-to-day. Really, in the last couple of years, I've transitioned. Really handle the day-to-day operations so that Bob can focus on innovation and culture and being a thought leader and really kind of building next year's business. So I run this year. That's how we split it.
Nice. And you mentioned Bob kind of being in charge of vision and marketing. How do you get on the same page as Bob with his vision? How do you get aligned with the vision of where he wants to take the company over the next few years? And then how does he stay aligned with you and your plans on how to execute?
Yeah, so we're big believers in your vivid vision process. So, you know, that's kind of the ultimate output. Typically what happens is Bob will put on paper a lot of his thoughts. I typically eviscerate them and then goes back and redoes them. And then kind of through an iterative process, we come to a point where we both are really aligned. And when I say eviscerated, I don't mean that I don't believe in vision. What I mean is that you know, as a visionary, a lot of times it's harder for him to articulate what he really means. And so we have to go through that process to make sure that everything is articulated in such a way that not only myself, but that everyone in the company will stand it and see it and want to fulfill that.
Okay, cool. You guys are 100% remote still, correct?
We are.
So you've got, you know, I think when we first met, you probably had around 40 employees. You've now got around 100, 120 plus employees on 4 countries. talk to us about what it's like running a remote company. How do you align people? Like, just really walk us through this, because this is a pretty new thing. I mean, companies are working with more remote employees, but not a complete remote company. And you guys are clearly doing an amazing job with it. So walk us through kind of how you're doing it, what's working, what's not working, what you've learned.
Yeah. So what we really focus on is building structures that will connect people in ways that, frankly, I think any company should be connected, but that just tend to work really well for a remote environment. So, and if I can rewind a little bit, I think one of the most important pieces of this is that, as you said, we're fully remote. And I think it's really different to be a fully remote company versus a company that allows some people to work from home or allows you to work from home. Those are all very different. When you know that you're going to be seeing someone maybe Monday, Wednesday, Friday, it's very different than when you just literally are never see the screen. Mm-hmm. So we built everything in such a way that it's assuming that no one is ever. So we, number one, have built a culture of over-communication. We really strive to make sure that we are saying everything repeatedly, that we're being very transparent in everything that we're doing, and that everybody has lots of, just frankly, information. One of the big things that we do now, which has really helped, is we write a lot of memos. And we distribute a lot of memos. So every month, I put together an all-company dashboard and a memo with key metrics. That's distributed to everybody. Every quarter, we put together kind of a strategic memo that's distributed to everybody. These are probably things that any company might want to do. But for us, it's a way where we can ensure that everybody has the basic information they need so that nobody feels like they're on an island. And I think the biggest risk with being an all remote company is that people just feel like they're on an island. And mostly that comes from feeling that other people know things that they don't. So mm-hmm. we try to eliminate that friction and make sure that it's clear that everybody knows everything there is to kind of be known about, you know, the high level competency every day. But in terms of the stuff that people are really going to care about. I think another thing that's super important is everything is on video. We make sure that anytime we possibly can, we're on video. And I think that really goes a long way. I also think that one of the major things we do is we encourage really authentic communication in all of our communication. So whether it's Slack or emails or just talking to someone on the phone, whatever it is, one of the core tenets of our culture is embracing relationships, and part of embracing relationships, one of our core values is relationship. And part of that is speaking authentically. And so if you don't feel like somebody is BSing you, it's much easier. Like, it's so easy when someone's not sitting next to you to believe that they're just BSing you, right?
Sure. Yeah.
But if you believe they're being authentic, it's, even though you're not sitting next to each other, it actually removes a lot of that barrier. So there's not a magic single thing that we do. Everybody, you know, we do all these different things. But if you talk to people at the company, almost all of them will say, if they've worked in a cubicle before, that they feel much more connected to people at Accelerate Partners, who they never met in person, than they ever did to the people that sat in the cubicle office. I think that's a big deal. The other piece of it is, like, we do get together. We do a major annual meeting where we do a lot of leadership stuff and team building. That's a big deal. We also have transitioned away from just hiring anybody anywhere. Now we focus on what we call hub cities. So we have six cities in the U.S. and then three overseas, where really we want most of the people we hire in those general areas, so that at least once a quarter or something, you know, go out to drinks or whatever.
That's interesting. What hub cities are you going after in the U.S.?
Yes. So our hubs in the U.S. are Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, Denver, and Southern California, and then London and Singapore, and Mexico City is actually starting.
Nice. Well, you add Phoenix to your list one day so we can visit once in a while. It's a good hub, Phoenix, Scottsdale, with the cost of labor and cost of living is a lot lower than some of the other cities too.
Just way too hot.
Yeah, I love the hub idea. That's really cool. Talk to us about the over-communication. Does that ever get tiresome for people? Do they ever get frustrated with being over-communicated to, or am I reading that the wrong way? you're not communicating the same message in four different platforms. Is it more just you're communicating the message until it's understood?
Well, sometimes you're communicating four times in four different platforms, because we definitely ascribe to the theory that you have to say something seven times before someone hears it. But I think it's more around the lines of radical candor, right? Like we try to make sure that anything that we think that people might want to know that's going on in the company is somehow made visible, and made visible probably in a few different ways, in order for everybody to feel really so, you know, every Monday I send a Monday update Slack to the whole company. That includes random trivia, because trivia, but it also includes like a list of big things that's going on in the company, what Bob's up to, what I'm up to, big sales ops, all that kind of stuff. Then we do all company calls every other Tuesday. Every department does an update, and a lot of that same stuff gets repeated. Then there's some new stuff. Bob does his Friday forward every Friday, which is a big email he sends to a lot of people around the world, not just Acceleration Partners, but a lot of the stuff that we talk about thematically at Acceleration Partners included in those Friday forwards. So there's a bunch of different things that go out at all times that are including different pieces. And when you put it all together, it's a lot of communication. It's by over communication, but I think people actually really appreciate it, and they would rather that.
Yeah. Than the opposite, for sure. You mentioned the Friday forward. I had a note to ask about the Friday forward, and then Bob's book as well, Performance Partnerships, which has done really well. Did the company have any input into the book or into the Friday forwards, or is he really just writing those on his own from a cabin in the woods somewhere and blasting them out?
Yeah. So it's funny. I thought Friday forward was the dumbest idea when he brought it to me. He brought me this idea, and he was like, I'm going to start sending this Friday email to some people, a little bit of wisdom. You know, it's not intended as a sales tool, but if it builds our world, our ecosystem, then great. And I said, why? Like, who gives a shit about what you're saying about your bits of wisdom? It turns out I was dramatically wrong, because he now has, you know, well over 10,000 subscribers, I think, Friday forward email, and it's gone gangbusters. The book, I think, was a little different. Well, I guess with Friday forward, though, we have no input on that. That's really his thing. He writes that. It's kind of bigger than Acceleration Partners. It's the stuff. So we don't really think of that as like a market partners. It's really something it's like. The book, you know, he wrote the book himself with the help of, actually wrote the book himself. He wrote it with the help of Book in a Box, or what's their new?
Yeah, they're now called Scribe.
Right. Scribe, which is a great company for anyone who, like to do a book. So he did the book with them, but that really was part and parcel to kind of Acceleration Partners' overall marketing strategy, because for those of you who don't know, the affiliate marketing industry is kind of a cesspool, and it doesn't have a great reputation in a lot of the digital marketing world. That's changing in large part because of us, but the idea behind the book was that by writing this book, it really kind of force people to look at the industry in a different way, and we could get people to do that. So that we definitely did have input into more purpose. Although Bob obviously
did. Interesting. Okay. The you know, you guys, and I was the same with the Friday forward. I'm like, this is a dumb idea. I don't know why you're wasting your time on this. No one reads blogs, you know, nobody reads emails, you know, blah, 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 whatever, go ahead and do it. And then it's like, now I get it. I'm like, damn, that was another good one. Wow, that was another good one.
That's why he's the visionary and I'm not.
Yeah, right? He's good. He's got another book in the making with all these as well. I'm sure you can just bundle these and Bob's your uncle.
It's a little more complicated than that, but yeah.
Yeah. Now, you guys opened up in the UK and in Singapore over the last couple of years as well. How's that going, and what was your approach to do that?
Yeah, it's going really well. Our approach to doing it was, we didn't want to do it just to do it. We knew that the only way it was going to work was to find the right person to be the flag bearer in each of those places. We're a very culture-driven organization, and we have very high standards. And Bob and I are, you know, we have very high standards around people that we choose to work at a leadership level at a company. And we knew that we just weren't going to be happy just opening up an office and finding someone to work. Really, the person had to. Mm-hmm. So we actually spent several years trying to find the person for London. We spent well over a year courting the woman who ended up joining us. Her name is Helen Southgate. She's a all-star in the UK and European affiliate marketing world. And once we had her on board, then we were really willing to make an investment, because in a lot of ways, similar to maybe like a VC firm, we actually weren't betting on the business. We were really betting on her, right? The same way that
sure.
kind of CEO. And so then it's the same thing in Singapore. We said, look, we know there's a big opportunity in Asia. Everyone's going to APAC, but it's a half a world away. We need someone there who we trust to autonomously do this and represent the brand. And we spent a long time finding that person because they just weren't willing to do it until we had them. So finally, we found Janice this past summer, and then we launched there. And you know, now it's made us really the only true global player in our industry.
Talk to us about the recruiting side of things. I mean, it's hard enough to recruit when you're, you know, all in a city and you've got a brand and a buzz around you, and you know, people are beginning to know your company. How do you guys approach the recruiting funnel? Like right from, you know, thinking about what position is you're hiring for, and then the postings and the screenings. Can you kind of walk us through your whole recruiting funnel?
Yeah. So the biggest thing for it is defining the roles and responsibilities and the metrics. So we start from there. And every job that we put out has a very clearly defined set of responsibilities, top five responsibilities. And it also very clearly states what success looks like in the first 6 months and typically what success looks like in the first 12 or 18. And they usually have numbers associated with them, qualitative and quantitative metrics. The idea is that if we put out, in our opinion, a extremely clear job description with the expectations we have, that the quality of people that are just coming into the funnel are going to be much higher, because most people are not going to apply for a job if they're looking at what the job is going to expect and they're thinking in their head, you know what, I just am not. So that is really a way that we found just proves the quality right off the bat, and we always start with that. The second piece of it that we've gotten really good at is we really defined a set of criteria that we find correlates highly to people who are successful in our organization. And we have really just found that if we look for people with those criteria, we end up with better results. So things like people who are competitive athletes is one of them. We found that people who are competitive athletes in our world do really well. And I think it's for a lot of different reasons. One of the reasons is that obviously they're competitive and they have work ethic, and that's great. But another thing is a lot of our culture is based on what we call work-life ownership, and the concept that when you are at work, you are owning your work. When you're not at work, you are owning whatever it is you're doing that's not at work. And we don't want the two to bleed over. We want you to have full ownership over what it is you're doing at whatever time it is. We don't believe work-life balance, because that implies that you're like bouncing me while you're working, and we're not right. But competitive athletes, they want to really own and focus on whatever their athletics is when they can, not at work. And so we find that this concept really resonates with those people, and they get it. They're like, I'm going to work my ass off when I'm at work, but when I'm running my 15 miles later today because I'm a marathoner, like, I'm not worried about work. And so they tend to really value what we do. So we have a bunch of markers that are like that we really look for. And so our team has certain, you know, they have a profile and then they're able to really apply that to the people that are coming at the top of the funnel. We then have a pretty rigorous set of interviews that go through HR and then go through the actual hiring managers and teams. Most of our jobs, the final round is a presentation. Since most of our jobs are client-facing in some way, either to an external client or to an internal stakeholder client, We want to see how they present and think on their feet in that kind of situation. And then every process ends with what we call a hiring committee. And in the hiring committee, the hiring manager and the recruiter in HR, as well as a couple of other people who are not incentivized one way or the other on whether the person gets hired, they're all in the room and they discuss any differences.
So it's pretty clear when your process is so strong as to why you've got such a strong team. And I think a lot of companies say they've got an A-level team. You guys actually have a really strong A-level team. Is there, when your process is so strong and so thorough, do you have to have a wider pool of applicants? Do you have to get more resumes coming in than the average company does? Or is your postings, I guess, so strong that you actually are only getting the right resumes coming through?
You know, it's a really good question. I'd have to ask about the metrics on that. I think it's actually both, oddly. So I know that we get hundreds of resumes, all the time. We get loads of resumes. Part of that, though, is that we're the biggest company in our sector for the most part, so and probably the most well-known. So a lot of that is just employment branding. I do know, though, that my HR person gave me this metric today, something like 80% of the people that get through the initial HR screen for our most common roles ultimately get hired because they've been filtered so well up front that there's typically not nearly as much attrition. So I think that probably is indicative of what you said on the other side.
Yeah, so you're filtering a lot more on the top end of the funnel.
Yes, for sure.
Smart. You said a couple times as we were talking, you know, what we call, like you've got a system and it's kind of like what we call such and such. Do you guys cognizantly brand a lot of your systems and processes?
Yeah, we're marketers. Well, I'm not a marketer, but the rest of us are. So we try to put names to everything. We like weird acronyms, like all kinds of stuff. We try to brand it. We have one that we call the mindful transition process, which our CEO has talked a lot about. That one we very specifically put a name to. We just find that if something has like a name, it's just easy.
Yeah, that was the process. It's funny, when I was just getting ready to start talking with you, I'm like, God, they have a system and I can't remember what it's called. And I kept going back and forth with another company that, you know, thinking if from the CEO Alliance, thinking if it was one of theirs, but it's the Mindful Transition. Can you walk us through what that is? Because it's a really, really strong system around essentially exiting employees from the company.
Yeah, so the Mindful Transition is kind of the flip side of the hiring process. So the Mindful Transition is for when we've determined, or the employees determined, that Acceleration Partners really isn't the right place for them anymore. And our belief is that getting 2 weeks notice from a employee is the worst possible outcome, because we're in a client service industry. No client wants to see their account manager give 2 weeks notice and just be gone. Internally, it creates havoc. We have to figure out how to transition, how to cover for them, all of that stuff. So 2 weeks notice is the enemy. And we also think that 2 weeks notice is the enemy because it burns bridges. If someone just gives us 2 weeks notice, we're probably not going to be their biggest fan moving forward. And frankly, most likely they're not our biggest fan, or else they wouldn't have given us 2 weeks notice. So there's a, on some level, broken relationship that exists in the world when that happens. And a lot of the time it doesn't matter, but you just never know. It's never worth having. So we created this process called the Mindful Transition, which begins with either the employee or the manager, starting with what's called a happiness conversation. And so really what happens is, from one side or the other, they get together and they say, it's the employee, they say, look, I'm really not happy. And if it's the manager, they say, you know, we get the sense that you're not happy. And typically, lacking performance is actually really happy, not just not doing well. It's rare that someone is not doing well, but also happy. And the happiness conversation starts it, and it's really just an open and honest conversation about what's going on, where they are, what they're thinking. And based on that conversation, we come up with a plan of attack. If the happiness conversation is, look, I love acceleration partners. I don't think I'm in the right role for me. I think my skills are better suited to someone else. Then if that person is a core value fit, we think that there could be opportunities for them elsewhere in the organization, we'll work to move them to it. I want the right person. If the happiness conversation is, look, you know, I really thought that I would be happy not working in an office, but I have a really small place and my roommates are here and I need more socialization during the day, then that's probably something that we at Acceleration Partners can't necessarily solve for them based on our environment. So we go through, we come up with a plan. Typically it's usually a 6 to 8 week plan. And during that plan, we work on that person transitioning out. We offer them job counseling if they want it. We offer them resume coaching. If they know they're in good standing, we'll call around for new jobs for them. We'll be a referral for them, predicated upon their acting in good faith with us during that period, doing all of their work, and not slacking. And we don't tell anyone in the company that this is happening. This is, it's up to the employee if they want to tell the person. And when somebody leaves, we never say, hey, we never give the reason why they left. So nobody really ever knows if someone left because their performance wasn't good enough and we just couldn't get it up. They don't know if it's because they weren't happy. Nobody really knows. We try to keep that. And at the end of the day, what you're left with are people leaving the company feeling respected and being big fans of the company, transitions happening smoothly and effectively internally and for clients, so there's no disruption, and ultimately no broken relationships. And to us, that's the best.
That's really strong. It's no wonder that you guys rank as one of the top companies to work for in the U.S. on Glassdoor right now as well. I think you're ranked number 12 in the U.S.
Yeah, we were. I think the new ones are coming out soon. So
that's awesome. I'll bet you'll be moving up the list. You guys keep winning awards as best places to work as well, which is interesting. Like, what are some of the awards that you've won for that?
I mean, we've got Ad Age, Glassdoor, Inc. Magazine, Entrepreneur. There's been a lot of them. I mean, part of it is that we've got a crackerjack marketing team, and they really do a good job with all that stuff. But you know, all those things are based on employee surveys, and especially the Glassdoor one. It's hard to fake Glassdoor. Faking Glassdoor is so obvious; you can see, like, you know, 27 positive reviews on the same day.
Right.
it's hard to fake that stuff.
Well, so yeah, you've got a good marketing team who's good at, you know, putting the proposals through, but you actually still have to be a great company to work for. So when you don't have a place for people to work, is there kind of a number one thing that you think you do as a company that establishes you as a great place to work when there's no place?
It's the culture, right? It all comes down to that. It's the culture is what keeps everybody together. It's what keeps everybody, you know, feeling it even when they are sitting at home and 3,000 miles away from anyone else on their team. It's all about people. And look, I was not super in favor of it because I'm always the last person to adopt new technologies. But, you know, Slack, frankly, has been like a huge boon to us because people are able to just stay in communication all day long. And I know a lot of companies fight, you know, Slack bloat with millions of channels and all this stuff. But for us, I think it actually does a little bit of the opposite by, you know, if people want to be in a Slack channel to share recipes and all that stuff, like, great. It helps keep people engaged with each other in a way that, you know, makes it feel less of a distance.
Yeah, they're going to be sending it over email if they don't have Slack. Yeah, I think that was actually one of the 10-minute talks you did at one of the COO Alliance events was showing us Slack and how you guys used it internally. Are there any other technology tools that you guys are using at Acceleration Partners today that, you know, you wouldn't want to live without?
Tiny Pulse is a big one. I know a lot of the COO Alliance folks use Tiny Pulse. We love Tiny Pulse. Zoom, obviously, we can't live without Zoom. It's the only one of these things that actually really works sometimes.
Right.
Trying to think of what else. You know, we love Greenhouse, the hiring system. That's a really big one that we use a lot. But, you know, honestly, there's not much that we use that's kind of not standard issue for most companies.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Tiny Pulse as well. They are the strong tool on that employee engagement. You guys started something on the marketing side that was interesting around a year or so ago, and you were getting together groups of high-level chief marketing officers in a few different cities and just having small dinners, you know, 12, 14 people for a dinner, just to engage and talk. And, you know, sure enough, I guess you were going to get business out of it. But how are those going, and what was the reason for doing it, and how did you run them?
Yeah, so we call those AP Experts dinners, and those are great. We still do them. We don't do them quite as frequently as we used to, but they're great. And essentially what it is we get, 15 to 20 senior level people in at a dinner. And we typically try to get a moderator, someone who's going to be interesting and knows the space and knows digital and really kind of ask good questions, conversation going. And really, it's just a nice dinner and an open conversation with people about what the challenges are. We find that in the marketing space, there are not as many opportunities for senior level marketers to get together and talk about stuff.
Weird.
It's interesting. I think the opportunities that there are just more formal. This is an informal way that people talk about their issues. And, you know, we've had people end up working for others who've been at these dinners, people who have partnerships at these dinners. So it's as much about connecting everybody at the table as us. Those are great. And look, as I mentioned, one of our three core values is embrace relationships. So it just really fits well in that. And again, we're not trying to get business out of it, but obviously it's strange.
That's cool. I just love the approach of just giving them a space to actually come in and talk. Do you guys use any hiring bonuses or recruiting bonuses at all?
We do. Yeah. Go ahead.
How do you structure those?
So it really depends on the role. We have some roles that are easier to fill than others. And so typically we pay referral bonuses different amounts depending on different roles. And most of the time it's tied to the person staying for a certain amount of time. So usually I think there's a kind of initial payment, and then the remainder of the payment happens after the new hire.
That's cool. So I want to talk a little bit about you and your growth as a COO. I mean, clearly over the years, the company has scaled completely. I mean, you joined when there's 5 employees, and there's now 120. So the entire company has changed around you. How have you continued to work on growing yourself as a leader? And what do you think one of the big lessons that maybe from failure you've had has been?
Yeah. Well, I've got a good lesson from failure here. So in terms of leadership, Bob Glaser has been in the entrepreneurs organization for a very long time. And he's always been a very big proponent of leadership and growth, and has done an amazing job growing himself. The man is more focused on personal growth than anyone I've ever met. And so what's been, I think one of the big things for me, frankly, is being around him, because he really pushes me to do this stuff. So, for folks out there who are trying to think this through, I think one of the biggest things is make sure that your CEO or owner or whoever it is, is on board with it. Because if they push you to do it, it's going to be a lot easier for you swimming upstream. So that's a big thing. But, honestly, for me, it's been about being part of organizations, being at the CEO Alliance, being at other organizations where I've learned from other people. As an operator, maybe this is an operator thing, maybe it's me, but I tend to not be a schmoozer. I tend to be more effective. I tend to not reach out proactively to mentors or other folks. So it's a lot better if I'm physically in a place where I'm forced to do that versus having to send someone to give someone a phone call. So that works really well for me. Also, working within some of the existing operating systems for companies, I think, has forced me to grow as a leader. We still do run the entrepreneurial operating system. A lot of people read the book Traction. In order to run that system, you kind of are forced to, you're kind of forced to learn how to do things in ways that, and that includes how to talk. We're also involved now with Scale Up and that group, and obviously there's a ton of additional learning that goes into that. So being parts of those organizations have forced me to get out of my comfort zone and do that learning and growth in ways where I just wouldn't do if I just had it.
Yeah, you're definitely plugged in. I love the EOS traction system. I've got a lot of my clients use that, certainly a lot of our members. They've done a really, really great job with systemizing. Just, I call it, they've kind of dumbed down the systems that Vern had originally done with Rockefeller Habits and Scaling Up. It's interesting to see you guys doing that transition now over to Scaling Up. I'll be speaking at their conference in October at the Scaling Up conference with Vern. His systems are amazing. They're real super strong. So how do you guys blend, or how do you decide what systems to put into a company and which ones to kind of shelf for another month or two? Like how much is too much with new systems when you're growing?
Yeah. So we learned the hard way in our first few years. We just ripped and pulled things too often without enough lead time for everybody. And it caused some havoc. Different time. So we learned from that experience to roll things out more slowly. We still run kind of a hybrid, of traction of EOS and a couple other things. We work with a scale up coaching group called Prescale, and they have us running stuff that has a lot of the elements of EOS, but is also some other things in it. And basically, we took 6 months, really, as a leadership team to get comfortable with some of the new stuff before we started rolling that out to the entire business. You know, to the point earlier of over-communication, rolling this stuff out it's so easy to mess it up. And when you have a bigger company, it just gets amplified. So rolling something out to a company of 20 people, like if you mess it up a little bit, it's way easier to kind of say, okay, well, we kind of made a mistake. We need to go back and fix this and do that. When you're rolling it out to 130 people, if you don't get it right the first time, it's just a mess. So
yeah.
We've learned that we have to be much more stringent around, you know, vetting all the communication, vetting the rollout process. It's big company crap.
No, but yeah. It's real crap. And this is, the company does go through a transition at the 100 employee mark too. And it's interesting to know whether it goes faster or later when you're remote. My guess is it would go even faster, but there's a lot of the big company crap that's required when you get big. So why don't you leave us with one parting lesson, something that if you were 21 years old, starting out in a seasoned role or a senior role, something that you've learned yourself that you wish you'd known earlier in your career.
The short-term gain is never worth the long-term pain when you are making a decision that you know is going to make things easier today, but likely will make it harder tomorrow. And I've just seen this over and over again, whether it's not firing the person who just needs to be fired because of X, Y, and Z reason, it's going to be hard, whether it's hiring the wrong person just because you're desperate to have someone in that spot because your life is miserable, whatever the thing is, every time I've made a decision to just plug a hole with something I felt in my gut wasn't the right long-term thing, it's gone sideways so fast. So I would say be patient, and yes, it's going to suck for a little while, but solve the problem right and you will be so much better off for it. Otherwise, you will probably end up having to solve the problem again in 6 months and again 6 months after that. Right. And it's
awesome. Matt Wohl, President of Acceleration Partners. Thanks for joining us on the Second in Command podcast.
My pleasure, Cameron. Thank you.
Appreciate it, buddy. Good seeing you again.
You did.
You've been listening to Second in Command with Cameron Harold. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe. To learn more best practices from industry-leading COOs, please visit COOalliance.com.